Did insurance cover the tea dumped at the Boston Tea Party? The biting December wind whipped across Griffin's Wharf, carrying the scent of salt and rebellion. Below, a defiant act was unfolding, one that would soon echo through the colonies and across the Atlantic. On December 16, 1773, a group of colonists disguised as Mohawk warriors swarmed the Dartmouth, the Aleener, and the Beaver, ships laden with the East India Company's controversial tea. In a dramatic display of protest against the Tea Act, they hoisted chest after chest of the fragrant leaves from the holds and hurled them into Boston Harbor. Over 340 chests, representing a fortune in goods, met a watery grave. But as the Mohawks worked with surprising efficiency, a crucial question lingers, shrouded in the mists of history. Was this valuable cargo insured? The answer, like many aspects of this pivotal event, is complex and tied to the precarious financial state of the very company whose property was destroyed. At the heart of the matter was the British East India Company, EIC. By the 1770s, the EIC was a titan of global trade, but it was also teetering on the brink of financial ruin. Its vast empire in India, while a source of immense wealth, was also a drain on resources, plagued by corruption and administrative inefficiency. The Tea Act of 1773 was, in part, an attempt to bail out the struggling company. It allowed the EIC to sell tea directly to the colonies, bypassing middlemen and lowering the price, even with the existing tax. The colonists, however, saw this not as a benevolent act, but as a sly attempt to trick them into accepting Parliament's right to tax them without representation. The ownership of the tea destroyed in Boston Harbor was unequivocally the East India Company's. The ships themselves were either owned by the EIC or chartered by them, and the tea was their cargo, destined for colonial markets. The EIC, as a major commercial entity, would have undoubtedly sought to ensure its valuable shipments against the myriad perils of sea voyages. Maritime insurance was a well-established practice in the 18th century, protecting merchants from losses due to storms, piracy, or other maritime disasters. However, pinpointing whether these specific shipments were insured and by whom proves challenging. Historical records from the era are not always exhaustive, and the specifics of individual insurance policies for every cargo are not readily available. It is highly probable that the East India Company, a sophisticated business operation, would have insured the tea. Lloyd's of London was already a significant player in the maritime insurance market, and it is plausible that the EIC's vast trade routes were covered by such policies. The implications of insurance in this context are fascinating. If the tea was insured, the financial blow to the EIC might have been softened. The insurers, upon paying out the claim, would have effectively stepped into the EIC's shoes, potentially seeking reparations from the British government or even, theoretically, from the perpetrators if they could be identified and held liable. However, the political reality of the situation made such a scenario highly unlikely. The British government, already enraged by the destruction of property, imposed the coercive acts, known in the colonies as the Intolerable Acts, in response. Boston Harbor was closed to all trade until the destroyed tea was paid for. This punitive measure highlights the gravity with which Britain viewed the incident, regardless of any insurance coverage. It's also worth considering the perspective of colonial merchants who were often involved in the tea trade. While the EIC had a monopoly, local traders might have also had interests, either directly or indirectly. If any of these individuals had an insurable interest in the tea, their insurance policies could have been affected. However, the primary ownership and the target of the protest lay squarely with the East India Company. Ultimately, the Boston Tea Party was not merely a financial act of vandalism, it was a profound political statement. The colonists were not simply destroying property, they were protesting a principle, the right to be taxed only by their own elected representatives. The value of the tea, while substantial, was secondary to the message being sent. Whether the East India Company recouped its losses through insurance payouts is a matter of financial record-keeping, but it does little to diminish the revolutionary fire ignited that December night. The act of defiance resonated far beyond the value of the tea, demonstrating a willingness to sacrifice material wealth for the sake of liberty, a sentiment that would soon lead to a war for independence. The silent, dark waters of Boston Harbor that night held not just tea, but the seeds of a new nation.